Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are going to be focusing on uranium because we are chatting with Justin Hune, founder and publisher of the Uranium Insider Pro newsletter. Now, Justin, I'm excited to have you back on the show because I think there's a lot to talk about in the uranium sector, and it's actually been a number of months since we had you back on. I want to start off with kind of a general comment on the uranium price action in the spot market and in the shares. Both were on runs, both have corrected. The shares maybe haven't corrected quite as much as you would think in terms of the uranium price and its correction, but in all fairness, both are still up, still very nicely from where they were, let's say, at the beginning of the year. Now, one of the main factors here, the big elephant in the room, I think, is the Sprott Uranium Trust and this fund's ability to, I think, almost single-handedly drive up the uranium price. They have this vehicle where they can keep on raising money and keep on buying some of that physical supply that is in the market, and that's had a direct impact on price. The thing I'm worried about is, again, this is one main buyer, and it's under the Sprott brand that we all know can move from sector to sector when they think price gets a little overheated and when there's just more interest in other sectors. Right now, though, there is still a lot of interest in uranium. Justin, what's your takeaway from this Sprott Uranium Trust, their ability to almost be the biggest player in the market right now?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. I'm happy to be back with you. Sprott is an absolute powerhouse in the resource space, and they announced the takeover of the Uranium Participation Corporation back in April, which is when we last spoke, actually. That deal was approved in July, and they launched their first ATM financing vehicle in August 17th is when it was approved and when it went live. At the market basically means that they're allowed to issue shares into the open market whenever there's, you know, sufficient volume, and they're trading at at least a 1% premium to their net asset value. So in the first 4 weeks since the ATM went live, they raised almost $300 million and purchased 10 million pounds of uranium in 4 weeks. That crazy buying spree took the price of uranium from $32 a pound to $52 a pound in 4 weeks. And the equities were on fire for that period. As you mentioned, everything has corrected a bit since then over the past 3 weeks or so. Spot prices come back down into the high 30s, which surprised even me. And the equities have corrected, although interestingly, the equities seem to be trying to find kind of a bottom here after about a 20-25% correction from the top. So the equities have corrected far less than the price of uranium. And I think that the market is pricing in an expected resumption of higher volume purchasing from Sprott and a seasonal move. Uranium has really strong seasonality, you know, averaged out over the past 15 years, for example, for Uranium Participation Corporation, which is probably the closest proxy to the price of the physical metal, makes a good run from the first or second week in October through about late February. And it doesn't happen every year, and it's not clockwork. But the reason that it does happen most years is that the U.S. utilities have a new fiscal year and a new budget on October 1st each year. And there's a number of conferences for nuclear fuel markets that happen in the autumn where fuel buyers get together, they discuss the market. Obviously, as you said, the elephant in the room is Sprott, and definitely utilities are waking up from their long slumber. They are likely going to try to avoid the spot market because it is so thin, and it's pretty clear that purchases of any significant volume are moving that price up. But we're definitely hearing there's a lot of action going on in the mid and long-term markets. There's a lot of discussions. There's a lot of RFPs, requests for proposals, being placed by utilities for 5+ year delivery, which is really, really good to hear. And Sprott currently, they have an issue with their U.S. OTC listing, SRUUF, an amended rule by the SEC, kept them from being able to be traded in the OTC until they update certain paperwork that they're working on now. So for the past about 4 weeks, this OTC ticker for the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust has been selling only. And that has definitely had an effect on the volumes that we're seeing in the market. So we think that this is, from a technical perspective, a pretty healthy correction. Most of the equities have pulled back down to a rising 50-day moving average. The uranium price has pulled back more than anyone expected, but I think that we're kind of about to see that bottom and likely to see another good leg up here in the next few months.
Well, Justin, you brought up a couple good points there. I want to dig into one or two of them. One was, you know, the seasonality factor. We're getting close to that. But as far as the run-up in the minors, a lot of people noted they were running far before the spot price really responded anyway. Some of that was on what they thought the U.S. government was going to do, making a strategic uranium fund. Some of that was anticipating that eventually we would start seeing a contracting cycle come on. Now it looks like that may have moved forward. So while the price did eventually of the spot did start catching up to the moves in the miners, it makes sense that they would hold steady before the price action because they were running regardless of the price before that in anticipation of the contracting cycle you brought up. So explain to listeners that may not be familiar with it, while there's a obsession over the spot price, it's really not nearly as material to the companies that we invest in, the uranium miners, as the term price and what we eventually see the utility company set up as an offtake contract longer term. So walk us through how that works and why that's key for the sector to start seeing that happen.
Sure. Yeah. And really good point. We saw this market really start to rally in December of last year when the spot price was doing absolutely nothing. So clearly some intelligent players in the market saw an opportunity. That was when, most uranium equities in the space were just deeply oversold and unloved, even after the rally off of the March lows of last year. And, as you guys know, with, a lot of these resource markets, precious metals, et cetera, when the miners move before the metal, usually the market is kind of telling you something in that in either direction. And so that run went hard from December until mid-June, pulled back pretty hard July and August, and then started to run again when the spot price started to move and the Sprott's ATM went live. The significance of the spot market is mainly it's the most visual and visible and frequently updated metric in the nuclear fuel markets for the investing community to see. It's updated intraday. There's a Twitter account called Numerco that updates anytime there's a new bid put into the spot market. And so that's something that's very visible. And so it definitely matters in terms of the investing community. And it also matters to some extent in the nuclear fuel markets as well, because a lot of these long-term contracts that you referenced, Chad, is they have a small percentage reference to the spot price. Sometimes small percentage, sometimes larger. And I think going forward, it's going to be smaller because now the nuclear fuel markets are recognizing that financial players and financial interests are in the physical markets in a bigger way than they ever have been. But in terms of the miners, what really matters for them is locking in long-term price contracts with utilities and with traders. And that's really what the miners are looking for. Paladin, for example, that has Langer-Heinrich mine in Namibia on care and maintenance, currently not producing any uranium whatsoever, they're looking for long-term contracts in the mid-50s per pound or higher in order to bring that project back online. So they're not going to just voluntarily come in and spend $80 million to bring it back online in hopes they can sell into the spot market. That's not what these larger miners are doing. Some of the small developers that might be producing 1 or 2 million pounds a year in a couple of years, they might just trust that they can sell that into the spot market and make some money. But the big players, the Cameco's, the Paladins, the Orinos of the world, they're all looking for long-term contracts at much higher prices in order to bring these pounds back online. And importantly, the long-term contracting price of uranium is updated monthly at the end of each month. Last month, this long-term price jumped up from the mid-30s. UxC reported it at $40 a pound. TradeTech reported it at $45 a pound. An absolutely huge jump in the long-term market pricing. And that's a really, really good sign, because that's not something that they are raising just on a whim based on the financial elements coming into the spot market. This is really actually has to do with utilities' interest in term contracting and what the producers are going to be willing to contract at. So that long-term price reflects, let's say, reality a lot more accurately. And one more point on all of that as well is that UxC they're the largest nuclear fuel broker, and they serve their clientele as the utilities, right? They have been very, very conservative to the point of absurdity over the last few years in terms of going forward, how tight the uranium market is going to be. And their messaging to the utilities has been just absolutely conservative. And they're now coming out and saying that the spot price of uranium in the next 12 months will end up being somewhere between $35 and $60 a pound. So funnily, that's just, they're putting it out there in a way that it's highly likely that they're not going to be wrong with that huge of a gap between those two price levels. But for a conservative entity such as UxC, even allowing the possibility of $60 a pound is an unbelievably big signal, and the utilities are definitely awake at this point.
So when it comes to these producers then, okay, they're waiting for some higher offtake or futures, some higher contracts to, I guess, ramp up some of their production. How much could that change the market, though, if some of these producers did start to ramp up production? Because, again, it's been mostly the Sprott Trust driving this market. We get some of these big miners in the mix again. Does that change the outlook?
It does, but it's an interesting complexity. So basically, you know, if Cameco's McArthur River and Paladin's Langerheinrich come back online, and let's say the Uzbeks and the Kazakhs ramp a couple million pounds a year, you know, we technically will end up with a statically balanced market within that time frame, let's say 3 years or so, maybe closer to 4 years if we're talking about McArthur River full production. And so that creates a balanced market if you're looking at taking a snapshot at any given point in time for that particular year. However, the utilities contract way far out into the future, and if you look at the later part of this decade, there's a really huge gap between what the expected demand is going to be for your utilities worldwide and what the expected production will be. So that purchasing, for example, 185 million pounds roughly per year is the demand by existing nuclear energy globally. However, it's likely that in a real bona fide contracting market, utilities globally could be purchasing and contracting upwards of 300 to 400 million pounds in a single year. So they're purchasing future production. And that's really what drives the price ultimately. So, and we also feel, you know, the way that Sprott is purchasing now, even with these lower volumes, you know, they're, you know, 500,000 pounds a week or something like that, that consumes all of the spot market production coming into the spot market. All of the actual producing uranium that's sold into the spot market is, you know, 1.5, maybe 2 million pounds a month. They'll consume all of it. And at that level as well, that's more than the secondary supply that comes into the market. So, which is a huge source of short and midterm uranium for utilities. So it's a very unique market. And yes, will we see a quote unquote balanced market with these mines coming back online? Yes, for a very short time, for a couple of years. But the utilities purchase out into the future to secure that supply.
Well, Justin, just one other area that I think we should mention, and that is the significance of some of these Japanese restarts. I believe they have, I think it's 16 reactors slated or, you know, getting permitted to come back online. And you brought up the secondary market there. That was a big force as well. And some people maybe don't understand this part, but some of the fuel from that the Japanese reactor is being shut down was being sold into the spot market along with Russian underfeeding and along with, at one point in time, the Department of Energy in the U.S. was dumping their mega tons for megawatts program, and they kept dumping. Well, that's all slowed down now. The Russians are not selling in the underfeeding. The U.S. has quit dumping, and the Japanese have gone from selling into the spot market to holding because they're restarting reactors. So what do you make of the Japanese restart scenario?
It's a pretty big story. They've at this point have restarted 10 reactors of the 54 that they closed down. Some of those 54, like obviously Fukushima Daiichi plant, will never come back online. There's a few others that have been permanently closed, but there's 16 reactors in Japan that are currently under review for a restart. And the newest energy minister, I'm forgetting his name, and that might not actually be his official title, but you get the idea. He's very pro-nuclear energy. And so it's highly likely that these nuclear plants will end up restarting, especially if they are serious about their stated carbon reduction goals. They have to restart basically all 16 of these reactors in order for carbon-free energy to make up the percentage of the grid that they're shooting for within these goals. So that's correct. I mean, you nailed it. The Japanese have been selling into the spot market over the years. It's been a difficult number to predict. Most people that make their own supply and demand modeling will kind of conservatively say, you know, maybe 3 to 5 million pounds a year, but that's something. So it's to the extent that they continue to restart these reactors, it's highly likely that selling in the spot market will dissipate as growing demand for enrichment happens over the next few years with new contracts being signed. The underfeeding is the primary secondary supply coming into the market. That is dissipating. We're already seeing that dissipate, going from, you know, mid-20s million pounds per year below 20 million pounds a year now. So these are big developments in terms of secondary supply. And then you add the financialization, sucking up those pounds in the spot market, and things are going to get pretty tight pretty quick here.
Okay. So I guess in summary then, Justin, you are still quite bullish moving into the rest of this year and even in the very near term after this correction. A lot of positive factors that you are watching here. Let's see how it all plays out, because it already has been a good run for these stocks, and they really have been kind of the standout resource stocks recently, helping some of those resource investors, I think, save some of their resource portfolios as the stocks have moved so much. Justin, always great chatting with you, buddy. I will post a link below so people can learn more about your newsletter, and we'll chat again soon to keep everybody up to date on the uranium sector. Thanks for your time today, Justin.
Always my pleasure. Thanks for having me.